From the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason on this final day of the show. Thanks to all those folks who have come and visit us in the University of Illinois tent that's at the corner of 3rd Avenue and West Street. We're really happy to have everybody on board. Just a quick look at the marketplace for this afternoon. Not a whole lot happening. I believe that the beans were down about 3 cents and corn was up a penny or so. Not much of a change. We'll get to those numbers and not worry too much about what they did for the day because, frankly, they didn't do a lot. But we'll talk about the analysis in a moment or two. Emerson Nafziger is here to set the stage for this afternoon. He's agronomist at the University of Illinois to take up what the weather impact might have had on this crop for the year. Emerson, I know you're being asked over and over and over again about the heat, the lateness of the crop, what's happening to the corn crop. Many people are very concerned. Do you share their concerns?
Well, I think there's always a concern when it's as dry as it is at this time of the month of August, and we really haven't, in this part of the state, had any appreciable rainfall this month. And so soils, you know, they're drying out. But what we have to remember this year is what went before. And I've been making the point that the corn crop was relatively stress-free after the late start to planting, but we had here in this part of Illinois, and I know everywhere you are is a different situation, but we certainly had soils with a good supply of water by the end of July. The crop had pollinated successfully. And we were, with the exception of those cool temperatures, the crop was clipping right along there up just until we're running into this heat right now. But if you look at the soil probes we've got out looking at moisture, it's certainly the case that this crop isn't out of moisture yet. And although when we start to see leaves curl up in the afternoon now, that means that the plant is starting to shut down. And on a daily basis, we're not putting as many bushels in the crop as we'd like to. I think that up to this point, we've had a pretty good run with the crop. And we might be a little surprised at what we find out there now, and that it may not take a whole lot more to get us to decent yield levels.
You're of opinion that there are places in the state that has enough moisture left in the ground to finish it off?
Well, we were lucky there in the Champaign-Urbana area to get a couple of the last week of July, but I think we're fairly close there to having enough for, say, the next 3 weeks or so, and it's going to take that long to finish this crop out that was planted the middle of May. And, yes, I think we have almost enough to take it to the end.
We're, of course, talking with Emerson Nafziger. He's an extension agronomist at the University of Illinois. This is the closing market report. Emerson, let's continue on with our conversation. Take up soybeans, because this crop is a crop you're much more concerned about.
That's right. Soybean have had the same weather experience that corn has had, but they were planted a little bit later yet. And so a lot of our soybeans went in late May and early June. And generally, the conditions for corn that were pretty good through June, July, August, and part of August, the soybean would not have experienced the same thing. Just physiologically, soybeans are more sensitive to the low night temperatures that we got several times during this last 6 weeks. And our big concern right now is that although the soybean crop looks pretty good canopy-wise, color-wise, that it just doesn't have the pod numbers that we need today to support the really high yields we'd like to get. The state had the projection August 1 estimate was 47 for Illinois. I'd be just overjoyed if we were actually able to get there. I'm afraid that it's going to take some unusually favorable weather in September to get this crop to that yield level. And I generally say with soybeans, we really don't know what we have until the leaves fall off and we can see the pods. And I'm a little bit concerned this year that we might be kind of disappointed when we see these two pod nodes on the plant, just not enough seeds to get those high yields.
Emerson, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Sure.
Emerson Nafziger, extension agronomist at the University of Illinois, joins us here at the Farm Progress Show for 2013. Just a reminder that you can always visit us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between. This is Illinois Public Media. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. Normally, we would talk with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Dan has graciously stepped aside. Well, I asked him to because he's not here in the tent at the Farm Progress Show site. Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities, however, has made the trip down from Normal, Illinois, to be with us here in Decatur. Pete, thank you so much for being here.
It's great to be here.
Okay, producer's been asking you many questions, I know, over the last couple of days about the corn market. You just heard Emerson say, you know, I think they will be pleasantly surprised when they get into the field. I don't think farmers are convinced, and certainly the market has not been convinced about that just yet.
Well, I you know, dry weather for an entire month in a lot of Illinois. We haven't had any for 4 to 6 weeks where I live. But 20 mile north and 20 mile west, we have had really good rains the last 2 weeks. So it depends on where you're at. But corn, it had a good June and July. Will August hurt it much? I kind of think it will hurt it more than people think. But Emerson just said we shouldn't worry about that. Beans, on the other hand, are, I think, a big problem.
Yeah, and everybody tends to agree with that one across the board. How much upside potential, at least at this point? There's a lot of growing season left. Maybe not enough to finish it off, but there's a lot of growing season left for the soybeans.
I don't know how long rain will help beans yet, but we do need rain for beans to fill out and complete. I don't know if they're going to put anything new on, but the bean size would get bigger. So, I mean, where we haven't had rain, I've got guys crying the blues. Where we have had rain, they're saying it could be, you know, just like last year or better. But we had, where I'm at, 10 inches of rain in August last year, scattered throughout the month, no gully washers, just good solid rains. And without some of that in the next 2 weeks, I think burnt beans and a big part of the state are going to hurt on yields.
Let's come back directly to the marketing process. Cash basis for old crop corn is translating to some extent into new crop corn. And we heard this morning from the Andersons a bit longer than we thought it might be into the month of September, maybe even a bit longer, to producers have an opportunity.
Yeah, he talked about if you can get anything harvested early and bring it to them, they're still going to be through the month of September $1 to $1.50 higher on corn just to get it in there because they need it. And he said it might even go into the first 10, 15 days of October due to lateness. Now, the problem I got with all of that is all the stuff that's not right now this week, I've got customers in deep southern Illinois harvesting 200 bushel plus corn right now today. So that, some of that could be brought this way also.
It'll be interesting to see what comes up from the Gulf. We know that there are ships and barges both headed this way from South America and then the barges on up from the Gulf of Mexico towards the central part of the state of Illinois and other places to the southeast.
Yeah, Brazil had, if not a record, a second best record crop on corn, and it will be shipped clear into January here or around the world. And they've had trouble with getting their beans out. They have trouble getting their corn out. I've been told by some people that 25 to 30% of that corn crop will rot laying on the ground before they ever get it shipped. But they still are a big factor. And then you go to Europe, you go to the Ukraine, you go to Russia. They all are growing more acres of corn and beans, just like South America. So we have a world problem of everybody, because of those prices, is growing more acres. They're actually using fertilizer now in Russia and growing better crops all the time. And in the Ukraine, they're 50, 60 cents under us a bushel. In South America, they're 20 cents under us a bushel. USDA has us exporting 71% more in the plan next year of corn. Why would they buy it from us when they can buy it 20 to 70%, 60 cents cheaper somewhere else? That's the part that bothers me. Even with a short crop here, let's say we have $1.5 billion carryout instead of $1.8 billion. That's still an awful big carryout.
Are you of a mind, as many of the commodity brokers might be, that maybe selling soybeans over the scale based on the premium that's in the marketplace, and I know it's early, would be the right thing at today if you were harvesting and storing corn?
I'm up in the air over that one. I might sell some if I need the cash now. I would rather sell the corn now and hold on to the beans, truthfully. I think the beans, if we don't have a very good crop, have got another $2 up. We've been up $2 in the last 2 weeks. Wouldn't surprise me for it to go more if beans aren't there. The world needs more beans. We don't have a problem with using the beans worldwide, whereas corn, there's more of it out there. and they can buy it cheaper elsewhere.
Thank you so much, Pete. Pete Manhart is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us here on the closing market report for a Thursday afternoon. Dale Opperly is with us. He's with Heartland Ag Group. That's right. Right from here in the Decatur, Illinois area. We're going to talk to you a little bit about land and the value of land. But first, tell me about Heartland Ag Group, please.
We're a farm management real estate company, been around for 20 years. And what a wonderful part of the world to be in, Todd. 72% of the land in Macon County, where we're sitting today, is absentee-owned. And that tells you in and of itself that it's investment quality. There's a lot of families, investors, and all kinds of people that want to own it and keep it for a long term.
That is a stunning figure. How does that compare statewide? Because I know you look at that number, too.
Statewide, it'd be a little lower because of the quality of ground is a little less. But 54% of the land in the United States is absentee-owned. And so we've got a lot of people that own farmland as an investment versus the farming community, which don't want to own it all. They want to rent it from you. So it's a good working relationship for landowners and farmers.
And your organization is a farm management?
We're a professional farm management organization. We spend half our time managing land from Lafayette, Indiana to the Boot Heel of Missouri, up to Minnesota. And then we spend the other half helping people with real estate. We buy, sell, trade. Whatever you want to do with a piece of land, we'll help you out with it.
Let's talk about the price of land. Do you think it's a bubble or is it ready to burst?
I'm not in the bubble camp. Our farm management group and the real estate agents that we deal with, we had a survey that we just took on June the 30th, and the majority of the people said, hey, we could have a little tough sledding, maybe a 5 to 10% squishy period, but then everybody's optimistic for the long pull. And I'd remind your listeners, Todd, that in year 2050, we're being told that we're going to feed 9 billion people, and that's an awesome task. So I think our long-term outlook in agriculture is pretty special.
Have you looked outside the United States at land prices and thought about what that means to prices inside the United States? Because it is all about supply and demand.
For my career, I've watched people talk about European land and stuff in other parts of the world that have been settled longer than we are. And they're at higher price levels, like the $20,000 and $30,000 an acre. And back, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, they were at levels that we were at. And so I think there's a lot of merit to understanding where the ones have gone before us, and we're probably headed for higher prices. Farmland is what it earns. You understand the earnings stream, and you're going to I can tell you where farmland's going. Today, if you got 200 bushel of corn at $5 and $1,000 an acre income, you can predict what farmers and investors will give for that acre of land.
Make the prediction.
Today, our average price of prime farmland in Decatur and the surrounding I states is 13,000, just slightly over 13,000 an acre. For the last 40 years, we've averaged a 6.5% average increase. When I came to town in 1972, before I had this gray hair, it was 800 an acre. Now it's 13,000. Put that in your little calculator, and it's 6.5%. I'll make the prediction that we'll stay on that uptrend path, maybe have a deviation, because last year we went up 21%, the year before 31%, We've kind of had to turn our hat sideways in here not to get it to blow off. But we could have a little correction and then continue the uptrend.
A best bet of advice on both sides for the farmer and for the landowner or investor, if you prefer.
One of the amazing things, and I know you got a lot of farmers in your audience, the farming community generally buys about half the land that's sold. And in our last survey, we found that the farmers and the local families have bought 85% of the land. There's part of my prediction right there. If the farming community is supporting the high-priced land, the rest of us better pay attention. And to landowners, my advice is, come on in. The water's fine. You're in it for the long pull. And I've had people waiting on the land market to back up because it was too high at 4,000 and it was too high at 7,000. And it's darn well too high today at 13,000. But in my 42-year career, we backed up the bus in the 1980s, and that was it. And to be a little bit of a smart aleck, when we took off again and land was approaching 4,000 the second time, those of you that remember us coming out of the dip, people said, it's a bubble, or they asked the question. And my comment then was, land in 1972 was $800 an acre. In 1980, it was 4,000. do the math, it went up 500%. So my prediction back then in the 1991 area was, if it went up 500%, it'll do it again. And so I was the smart aleck telling everybody, $3,000 land will be $15,000. I never believed it, Todd, but it's here. And so you got to be careful what you wish for.
I didn't hear you say 45 today.
No.
No. Okay. Thank you so much, Dale. Any final word for everybody?
Save your money and buy a farm.
Thanks so much. Dale Opperly is with Heartland Ag Group from right here in Decatur, Illinois. Give him a nice hand. Thank you so much for joining us, Dale, on the Closing Market Report. Brad Zwilling is with us. He's upstairs in Mumford Hall at FBFM. That's the farm business, farm management folks. Tell me what FBFM is and what it does, please.
Thanks, Todd. FBFM works with farmers throughout the state of Illinois. We're a non-for-profit cooperative. We work help with record keeping, farm financial management, do consulting work with that, and as well as some income tax management.
And how many producers are involved in the Illinois FBFM?
We have about a little under 6,000 farmers across the state of Illinois that work with about 60 staff throughout the state.
You're looking for staff at this point because you're shorthanded?
Yeah, we are. Just like most industries, we've got most of the people that work with us have worked 20, 30, 40 years, and we've got some of those, a third of our staff are getting up there in age. So we're starting to look. We've got 5 openings right now. We're looking for people with ag econ degrees. And if you're interested, just contact us go look at fbfm.org. That information's there.
And how do people get hold of FBFM if they want to enroll in the marketing plans?
Yeah. If you want to get involved in working with FBFM, the best place is to go to fbfm.org or look for us out in the local communities. We're out there. We live in the community. We go to the county fairs. We're there. We're always open to looking for things. We're at career fairs. We're at fairs like this. We're at the Farm Progress Show. We're at the machinery shows.
Thank you so much, Brad. Brad Zwilling is with FBFM, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Nick Anderson is with us. He's with the Illinois Livestock Development Group. And he's going to talk us a little bit about livestock in the state of Illinois and its development and where it is and what's been happening with it over the last, 10, 15, 20 years, and how you're working to put more livestock back in the state to use the commodities that are raised here.
Well, and what we're seeing in the state of Illinois with the previous speakers, input costs with feed and grain, land prices, all affect livestock production. Our goal in the future is to increase our livestock numbers. And there's a trend today, livestock is coming back to the Midwest because of input costs. Our cost of production is where really beneficial to livestock production. And in the past 20 years, we have added $800 million worth of new infrastructure in the livestock industry through the Livestock Management Facilities Act. That's a great boom. It's kind of an untold story, but these grain markets and land values all put factors on livestock production and the food we produce. And when your previous guests talk about our population boom, we're going to have to feed the population out there, and livestock's got a great future, and so does the Midwest.
The Illinois Livestock Development Group is targeted to helping producers site their properties.
It is. If you haven't built a new facility, there's rules and regulations, the ever-ongoing regulations that all of us have to deal with. Our group is here to help people through that process and make it a smooth transition so they can capture the market and take advantage of this other advice that the agriculture has and the market has in it.
Thank you so much, Nick. Nick Anderson is with the Illinois Livestock Development Group. Our thanks, by the way, to many of our sponsors. They include ADM and AgriGold, along with the Andersons and a whole bunch of other folks. Let's talk a little bit about the marketplace at this point. We have several people with us. Merrill Crowley is on hand. Merrill, you heard earlier in this broadcast Emerson Nafziger say, hey, wait a second, I don't think this corn crop's as bad as people are making it out to be. And it hasn't been hurt nearly as much as many people think. What are your thoughts?
It's hard to argue with somebody as knowledgeable as Emerson.
But you're going to, aren't you?
A little bit.
Okay, I thought so.
We are seeing good yields come out of the south, somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 bushel over the average. We have the potential out there if you had rain. When you look at an ear back during the time when the Pro Farmer Tour was going on, and you see the size of the kernels, and you see the ends on it, and you say, well, we really haven't had any rain to fill that out, it is difficult to believe that we're going to see bigger corn yields. You go back into, say, 1993, you go back into 2003, and 2003 was similar weather-wise as what we're having now, it took until October before people finally decided the corn crop was hurt. So, and we're going to have to wait till October or get more actual yield data before we'll know for sure. But my opinion is it's going to be tough to be much better than where we're at right now with the USDA numbers.
Greg Johnson from the Andersons is here on stage with us, too. I must say, Greg, that next week we'll be at the Andersons in their Everly and Estherville, Iowa facilities, along with a whole group of folks to put on one of our Will Ag panels. Hopefully those folks that are in Iowa will come out. Jackie Vakes will be among that group, and Elaine Cub, along with Sue Martin. I think Mr. Brugler is going to come out, maybe a couple of others as well. We're looking forward to being there. But your group, not only there, but across the Midwest, has really been pretty good with cash basis and paying very well. Your expectations over the next month for cash basis?
Well, we have to transition from a short old crop supply to a somewhat plentiful new crop supply, especially in corn. Right now, I think cash basis is $1.40 over the December. The fall basis, in Champaign anyway, is 10 under. So that's $1.50 premium for old crop corn versus new crop corn. So you're going to see every possible way that elevators can get grain to these ethanol plants and feeders and people that need corn. Free drying, half-price drying during the month of September, moving barges up from the south where harvest is going on to the north. So eventually that $1.50 premium differential between old and new is going to go away, but it's going to stay there for quite some time, probably through the whole month of September. And on beans, that premium could stay positive basis. That premium is going to be there probably through the whole harvest, at least half of it for sure.
Another person on stage with us is Paul Bergener. He is with Farm Progress Publications, Farm Futures. Paul, as you look out over the next 6 months, what are the best opportunities that farmers will have to sell corn?
You know, there's going to be an opportunity right away, is my opinion. The real question is going to be, when do we determine what the size of this crop is? If that number comes in a little bit smaller, there's going to be some better opportunities once we get through harvest and we get a handle on the size of this crop. There's still a lot of question there.
And Darren Newsom from DTN is here as well. Darren, I will ask you the same question. You have until 2:30 to answer.
Okay, I got 2 seconds here. as far as opportunities to sell corn, you know, there's been a lot of great discussion about the corn market here. I think so much is going to have to do with, you know, how strong is this bean market. Really, the best bet corn's got is to ride the coattails of beans. It was mentioned that the basis probably isn't going to stay that strong. I fully agree. But here in the interim, when we're trying to figure out what type of crop we have, I think corn's going to try to fight at least a little bit. We're going to see some investment money coming back into the market. If nothing else, they're going to cover the short position they've established. So I think here over the next 2 to 3 weeks, we've got the opportunity for the market to move 30, 40, 50 cents higher just on the coattails of soybeans. Then we'll see where we go from there.
Thank you so much. You've been listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It has come to you from the Farm Progress Show right here in Decatur, Illinois. Thanks to all those folks who came out to see us. Remember, you can visit us online and hear this program, any of our programming, anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. If you're on a smartphone, that will size right down to the smartphone, or you can use our other mobile website at m.willag.org. From the Farm Progress Show, I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
It's National Whiskey Sour Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1794, Sir Gilbert Blane was born, a Scottish physician. He was among the first to require a diet including lemon juice on Navy vessels, which virtually eliminated scurvy. James Lind discovered the value of citrus juice in 1754. In 1828, the first U.S. patent for a break of any kind was issued to Robert Turner of Ward, Massachusetts. The patent called the device a self-regulating wagon brake. In 1915, Nathan Pritkin was born. A nutritionist, he believed that exercise and a low-fat, high unrefined carbohydrate diet helped reverse his own heart disease. He founded the Pritkin Longevity Center in 1976. In 1967, Charles Darrow died, an American inventor. He designed the board game Monopoly in 1933, and he received a patent for the game in 1935. The patent titled it a board game apparatus, intended primarily to provide a game of barter. We wonder what Darrow would think of Farmopoly, where the tokens include a pig, cow, boot, hat, tractor, and armadillo. And that's this day in agricultural history. Listening to the Closing Market Report, this is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave.
The question everyone has is, well, it's twofold. I think the first part of it more important, and that is, when will it rain in the Corn Belt? And the secondary question is there a cool down in sight, and if so, for how long?
Well, we have the answer to both of those questions here at T-Storm Weather. The first one is that, yes, there will be some thunderstorms developing through parts of the Corn Belt over the next several days, and it all occurs along a strong cool front that moves through on Sunday. So we will see some thunderstorms moving from Minnesota and Iowa through Illinois and Indiana over the next several days. But the real problem is that we're not expecting high coverage of a heavy rainfall. We're looking for scattered to widely scattered thunderstorms across the region with only quarter inch to half inch amounts, again, across scattered areas. We're now looking for widespread coverage of heavy rainfall. The real problem there, too, is that we do need a large amount of rainfall over the next few days. If you start taking a look at how dry it's been lately relative to history, we have some fairly interesting statistics. If you look at August alone across Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, it looks fairly likely that we'll end up having the second driest period on record for August since 1960. But even more importantly than that, if you go all the way back and look at July through August, we'll end up having the number one driest period on record since 1960, and actually the number one driest since 1936. So this is a very dry period that we've been in. The unusual piece of that is that it's been fairly cool throughout most of July and August.
And the temperatures?
Well, the temperatures will start to change once we get into Sunday, and especially Monday, Tuesday. We'll have a very strong cool front move through, which will take all of the heat that we have taking place, not only today, but more so over the next couple of days, and push it well off to the east. And that will essentially be the end of the heat wave. For the first 7 to 10 days of September, we'll just see temperatures fluctuating between near average and slightly above average levels, with highs ranging from the upper 70s to low 90s, depending on which day it is. But we're not going to be seeing a sustained heat wave once we get to Monday and forward.
What about a second week of the forecast for potential precipitation?
Well, we'll see a couple of cool fronts move on through the Corn Belt. So just because of that alone, you have to add some thunderstorms into your forecast. But the real question is, will we see high coverage of heavy rain? Because that's what we need, and we need it very quickly. At this point, it doesn't look like humidity levels will be at the right level to produce widespread coverage of heavy rain. So once again, we're just forecasting scattered thunderstorms. It looks like it'll stay below average as far as rainfall goes all the way through September 7 to 10. So this is not really the best of news for soybean farmers in particular.
Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
That's Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.